estate services, Lavazzi and Boob1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 471. I'm Adam, and build high for happiness. And here's Ian Bissett.
Sorry. Oh, don't worry, he'll keep. He's full of colouring, flavouring and preservatives.
Was that it? Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Happiness will prevail.
And Mary Lang.
Happiness will prevail.
It's funny because I'm sure on the actual the recording for the podcast, it will come through as happiness will prevail. But because of Skype and various audio issues you get through coming straight through my speakers, it just sounded like piss will prevail for some reason.
But wasn't Built High for Happiness Harris Towers?
Yes, well done. But that was the hilarious little joke that I thought would work well. Oh.
Well, what are you going to give your quote from this story?
I'm not going to do a quote from this story. Oh, Fifi! Yes, that. Is that right?
Oh, dear. So now I know the opinions of two of the people.
Fifi! Anyway, right. Lillian Robbins says, is everybody happy? And then Laurie Nick says a rhetorical question. I don't. Laurie Nick says, "Well, your name for it is better than crappiness patrol." And Terry Mars says, "Hi, 20 megabyte podcasters, peace out." Yes, we're going to be.
In order to answer Lillian's question, yes. I have a question for you, Adam.
Oh dear.
How long do you expect this show to last?
Well, it could last, if we play our cards right, about an hour. We've got Kirby on the show, so I'm saying about 2 hours and 7 minutes. Rough estimation.
Okay, I'll be happy in about 2 hours and 7 minutes when I'm done talking about the Happiness Patrol.
Oh, dear.
Where did I get up to? Oh, yes, we're going to be talking about the Happiness
Patrol. You're all
Happiness
Joys,
Patrol.
Aren't you?
Sure, we're going to talk about the Happiness Patrol. We might even have some other... well, we might have Debbie Melrose on later if we play our cards right.
She said that she was going to, as soon as she finishes having dinner with somebody.
Oh, how's she going to let me know that she's ready?
I don't know. Why don't you pop out the door, go down the street, and ask her?
She could just go on Skype and click the join the conversation button.
Well, no, because I haven't added her, because I've created a new group, because I didn't want to call Robert in the early hours of the morning. So I'll send her.
Just add her in now.
It's Melrose, isn't it? Melrose. No, that says Mel Soze.
You live down the street from her.
Apparently so, yes. I saw. Oh, it's just very really good.
The thing is, I was just telling my wife about that joke the other day.
It's a good one, though, isn't it?
Like to tease Adam. It's like, why don't you just walk down the street and knock on the door?
It's a good one. It's a good joke, isn't it?
It is. Well, considering I don't actually know what the actual size of the other one is. It's like,
size isn't everything, Ian.
It plays well over radio. Let's put it that way.
I would say that.
Take a look at Google Maps sometime.
Huh. Penis Patrol begins with, hang on, me. I've actually got the DVD running today, which is going to help my abilities to skip past Kirby's comments no end. It begins with a title sequence and a very sort of fairly good studio-based set, to be fair. It's quite atmospheric and does give the sort of feel of a sort of dark and dingy, miserable-looking place. Which is supposed to be happy. And there's a woman that's walking around.
Master.
Rick Rastardly.
I think 2 hours and 7 minutes begins now.
I hope it's not bloody pointless. Go on then.
The actress who plays this particularly unhappy person is her husband was the other CIA agent in Delta and the Bannerman.
Whoa, right.
Real life.
Okay, she's a rather grumpy looking woman who's been in other things. I must admit, I do recognise her face. And then some bloke comes up to her and tries to have a conversation with her, tries to engage her in grumpy conversation, shall we say. And she gets lured into it. And then some rather cheerful...
He'd have a field day in here, wouldn't he?
Sorry?
He'd have a field day on this show, wouldn't he?
Hey.
So, Adam,
I've lost where I got up to now. What? And then some ladies turn up, just obviously come out of some sort of 80s night out. And you get quite a lot of those before lockdown. There was some, they would do late 80s nights where people get dressed up like these ladies with their water guns, water cannon guns, what are they called?
Fred says that they look like super soakers.
Yeah.
That's essentially what I said. I just use water cannon guns, same sort of thing. And, of course, they're going to kill this lady. From there, you sort of guess that you're not really allowed to.
But not... They don't yet, because it's her picture at...
All right, they kidnap her, and but they're going to subsequently kill her at some point.
Gets R.I.P.
Yes. Subsequently, she's going to get killed for being unhappy. The Doctor and Ace turn up.
That's better.
And, yeah, don't know why they turned up, actually. And then we meet Helen... is it Helen A? I can't remember their blooming name.
Helen A. Running
and...
away, Helen A. That was going to be my other one.
It's a sort. I suppose she's sort of a bit like Margaret Thatcher, but with a funny coloured wig, perhaps.
A bit.
She's sort of like telling everybody they've got to be happy or else. She's got sort of issues, which we don't find out until later in the story. And then... that joke from bloke from Case of Androzani, I thought he got killed. I was a bit surprised when he, well, not surprised, confused when he turned up. Not was his name, the bloke from Case of Androzani, got killed by Sharis Jack.
Is that him?
Yes, it is him.
You're talking about the census taker?
Yeah, he's the.
I didn't realize.
How
that.
Could you not realize that? He's got a very distinctive voice.
You know who everybody is in this show.
Isn't that your job, Kirby?
Yes, I am rather appalled. I think we might have to dock your wages for that one. How could you have not known that this was... what's his bloody name? More something.
Anyway, I suppose I got to look it up.
You haven't. I suppose you have, yes.
So for those of you who weren't here at the beginning, I think before we started, Kirby got a ding. Can we unding him?
No. Unding him, that sounds.
John Norman.
Is that a euphemism for something? It could end up being so.
What, yeah, undinging?
So, I can't remember his name. Anyway, he was the bloke from the Cage of Androzani.
Crazy enough, I guess I'm a ding-a-ling.
And then the 80s crew discover the TARDIS and start painting it pink.
I love that.
Do you?
Yes. I always like the pink TARDIS.
And then, what's her name again?
The Happiness Patrol, the podcast.
One of the women whose name I forget then corners Ace and the Doctor, and Ace starts getting a bit funny and showing her displeasure. The Doctor, who has realised that they must try and give the impression, at least, to be happy, sort of manages to sort of get her to pretend to be happy. And then we see a sort of video of the woman we saw in the first scene getting done in, being watched by Helen A's husband, is it? Is it Ronald Fraser who plays Helen A's husband? Bit of a British film icon, really.
He's Ronald Fraser, yes.
British film icon. Was he not in that amazing film with... what's his name again? That actor that was in... that incredible one, The Wonderful Life, what was it probably called? James Stewart. Wasn't he fit in that film with James Stewart where the airplane crashes in the desert and they've got to try and survive?
Have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do I have to look up everything? Right. I'll just look it up. What's it called, though, the film? The film where the plane crashes in the desert.
The best thing, I don't know.
Oh, my God.
We would be a lot more helpful if we knew what the hell you were talking about?
There's a it's a famous thank you. It's a
famous that nobody can remember the name of it. Huh?
Well, we can't. Others are probably screaming at us right now.
God, right. It's a very very well known film. Like, this is the art. Is it The Flight of the something or other? Anyway, very well known film. Plane with James
Flight
Stewart.
Flight of the Phoenix. It's got to be Flight of the Phoenix.
Yeah. Is that what happens in The Flight of the Phoenix?
I have no idea.
Well, thanks for that.
I'm just looking at a list of.
What's it called? Airplane? Yeah, or what's it called? Survival? Or...
Yeah, that's it.
James Stewart's in it.
The 1965 American drama film starring James Stewart. Story describes a small group of men struggling to survive their aircraft's emergency landing in the Sahara Desert.
Okay, but does it say Ronald Fraser's in it?
Yes.
Yes! I get a ding! Yeah,
I'm getting this from the... I brought up Ronald Fraser's
Wiki
page, and then I looked at his filmography, and then I guessed.
Right, okay. Can I just say...
Oh, he was in the bed sitting
The point in which that I said, was Ronald Fraser in it, you said, yes, that's all we needed. We didn't need any of the other subsequent whys, wheres, and whats. And my T-shirt's coming out.
Can I just take a moment to say this rabbit hole was presented to us by Adam.
Lillian Robbins says, I want to cosplay those Happiness Patrol uniforms, as I said on the Facebook group, which you can join. Alan T. Butcher, you guy are not usually more helpful even when you do know what Adam is talking about. Anyway, and, I think he means just, you guys.
Just to be helpful.
I think he means you guys.
John Normington plays Trevor Sigma and played Morgus.
Mordres, that's it. So again, I was right.
Oh, okay.
So that's two things I've got.
The head guy with the hair slicked back, kind of receding hairline.
Yes, I recognize his face now.
Oh, you do now. Well, that's good then, isn't it? So that's twice I've managed to do your job for you, Kirby, in this particular episode of the 20 megabyte of Doctor Who podcast. Right then,
well,
so,
master.
Well,
master.
Yes.
Master. He also reappeared in Torchwood as in the episode Ghost Machine.
What? What, Mordred?
You're welcome, Kirby.
No, not Mordred. Morgus.
Yes.
Morgus. Morgus.
I love the way, you know, back to Doctor Who.
Master.
Nearly back to Doctor Who.
A whole lot of trivia for this one because I did not get a chance to watch with InfoText for very long or listen to the commentary. I wanted to listen to the commentary because this was a moderated commentary, which means it wasn't going to go rambling.
What, like this show?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, back. Where did I get up to? Oh, yeah. I did rather like the Helen A. On the fruit machine thing. I love the fact they turn the fruit machine in, which, I mean, you could probably do with modern-day fruit machines because they're all done by, you know, sort of special... These display, they're just like a TV screen with touch screens and all that malarkey on it. So that was quite clever.
Well, heck, the gas stations now, that when you're standing there, I'm like pumping gas and all of a sudden somebody starts talking to me. I look over, there's this woman on the screen. Like,
oh, we haven't got that sort of technology.
So that's what you call a slot machine in Britain?
A slot machine? It's a fruit machine.
A fruit machine.
Fruit machine, yeah. Or one-arm bandit.
That one hasn't got any arms in it, though, Ian. It's got buttons. Just being pedantic.
I know they all do these days. The arm things were fun.
My friend had a one-arm bandit in his bedroom. I would be so jealous of him. He ended up being the best man at my wedding, but he had a traditional arcade 1P one-armed bandit in his bedroom. It was great fun.
But all I had to use that as a bargain. It's like, ever wanted to be my best man? Yeah. Well,
he should have put down. I think he got rid of it years ago. But I did have pocketeers. I get these little. They were little pocketeers that you would get in the. I think it was the '80s. I don't know. Little plastic gaming machines that weren't electronic. And I had one that was driving cars, and you'd used to wind this little wheel to make the cars go around the circuit on a magnetic thing. Yeah. And the fruit machine one was really good, actually. Didn't used to pay out many money or anything, but it was quite good fun to play. They were called Pocketeers, if you're old enough to remember. somebody's going to Google that now. Right, moving on. So, anyway, pardon?
Oh. Doctor Who.
Yes. Ace and the Doctor meet this chap by the fruit machine who's got he's got a face, one of those masks you wear, a face mask that have like cucumber on them, but he hasn't got the cucumber bits. So, you know, if you want to moisturize, women wear them a lot, you know, these sort of, I think they're called face masks, ironically,
Facial masks.
Tim Drury is here, which allows me to play this. That was slick, thank you. Let's try that again. Sorry, Tim. That's better. He says, Adam's happiness will prevail if Kirby interrupts less this week. Ain't gonna happen. Right then. The woman who plays, is it Priscilla? I can't remember. Very posh lady. She always plays in other productions that she's been in. Very posh. Slightly eccentric characters. And I didn't quite catch the names properly, I'm afraid.
The woman who played Priscilla was Rachel Bell. She's been in Grange Hill.
Right.
Darling Buds of May.
Hmm.
One episode of Only Fools and Horses.
All right, thank you. That'll do. Where do we get up to? She's very good. She's still doing TV now. And she looked really cool in this costume. Her legs were great, but you never get to see her wearing anything like this again. And they're in this sort of room where this chap is under a sort of big tube. He's obviously going to get done in a weird sort of way. And the tube comes down and the tube fills up with something. What is it? Sweets or sugar or something. I don't know what it fills up with.
Candy or raspberry ripple surprise, something or another.
Yeah, anyway, it comes down anyway.
Fondant surprise.
Fondant surprise. That's what it was.
And when the tube, obviously, then we see the Candyman briefly just before that. But when the tube, because he's controlling all this stuff, comes back up again, it's quite gruesome actually when he flops out of this sort of, obviously, almost dead, then was dead. This tube covered in, and they make the liquid red to sort of make it even more gory, I suppose.
The
gentleman that was, of course, dispatched in such a way was played by Cy Town.
Who?
And Cy Town is he's one of the Dalek operators that worked on every Dalek story from 73 to 89.
Yes.
He was also in Remembrance of Daleks, which is watched. He was also in Spearhead from he was in Auto and Spearhead from Space. And he was in Doctor Who and the Silurians, and also in Inferno.
So he's been in a lot.
That information isn't on the Wikipedia page.
What's that?
That information is not on Wikipedia.
It's in the Doctor Who guide. Thank you very much.
Yeah, all right, shush. Anyway, so for some reason, Helen A., who's been watching all this remotely, presses a button which zaps man with facial mask to death. Which upsets. Oh, yeah, because then who makes one of. Oh, is it Priscilla makes a flippant comment about it, which is quite amusing, to be fair. Which upsets Ace. And, of course, the Doctor has to hold her back. And,
He has a cunning plan.
But, yeah, there's this little go-kart, which, quite amusingly. Priscilla,
this is where it goes up.
What are you going to do if we get in that gold cart? Nothing. But of course, Doctor realizes quite quickly that the go kart is booby trapped, but defuses the bomb and off they go. And then of course,
slowest getaway.
You can catch a glimpse of one of the heaviest patrol members kind of ducking into an alcove where. They left it out. I think it might be in the deleted scenes where she was supposed to be there ready for the explosion. She's getting out of the way of the explosion. But it's at the top of the screen as you're looking down at Ace and the Doctor's head as he's defusing the bomb.
Okay.
Also, they were he was defusing the bomb at one point, and it fell apart.
Oh, okay. Then we have we meet what's her name?
I'll run out of info soon.
Helen H. I hope I get these names right.
Well, I've got a good story later for about Infotex, yes. The Candyman, and marriage. But continue.
Helen H. has got a cage. She's got a cage, and within that cage is.
Look forward to.
Yeah. I already know it, but this is
got three-way interruptions. She has this cage, and she removes a sheet from the cage, and within that cage is a fairly decent puppet, it's got to be said, of the limited expression a dog thingy called Fifi. Fifi.
I thought it was a rubbish puppet, but that's...
It was okay.
My opinion.
For its time, it was...
It was okay for its time. Because if this puppet appeared in Doctor Who 20 years earlier, everybody would have been raving about it.
Yeah. Here it just looks ridiculous.
Yeah, it's only because similar efforts in Star Wars, Yoda, for example, were slightly more, successful. There you go. They tried. So the Doctor diffuses the bomb, and off they go in their go-kart. And then we meet this chap with his harmonica, which I quite enjoyed this harmonica side of it, right? Because this sort of was more or less the main music for the show, and it really did give a special atmosphere to it. So
excellent Dominic Glenn music in this one.
No, in that instance, if it was just harmonica, it was really, really good. And I loved it. Really like the Doctor Who music of this era. But it did work well, very, very, very well for him. He's wearing a really sort of a suit that would have sort of not been out of place on certain singers of this era.
Master, the character was scripted to carry a trumpet, but that was deemed a little difficult for him to just carry around.
No, the pull trumpet, out of his pocket. What a stupid. A harmonica was perfect.
Yeah, it was.
Anyway, so there's obviously an accident with the go-kart because the Doctor ends up upside down. Oh no, he's trying to fix something. And then they get cornered by a group of women wearing silly wigs, including Lindsay Dunlop, who'd been in Frontiers before then, and I'd forgotten she'd appeared in Doctor Who again after Frontiers.
Tractators!
Not at the moment. I did have some for dinner, but thanks for offering, Ian.
Not a problem.
Oh, you said tractators, not potatoes, didn't you?
I'll just stick them back in the fridge now.
So Ace then makes friends with Lindsay Dunlop, and I suppose that chap who's got the harmonica, I mean, the harmonica music is the blues, and where he doesn't get instantly into trouble for playing it. He gets a little sticker stuck on his jacket. He'd obviously just been to the dentist. It did say smile on it. I'm getting bangs. I got into trouble. You know when I said last week when the lights went off?
I'm sorry, I put something down.
What?
If I put something down and you heard it. I'm sorry.
I didn't hear that anyway. I'm just trying to tell a story. Last week, do you remember the lights went off and I had to say... Amazon device front room light back on. Yes? Well, that was because Deb had sent a signal from upstairs to turn the light off to indicate that I was being too loud.
Ah!
It's the politest indication of my loudness we've ever had while doing the show.
Well, I was down here in the geek basement yesterday, and my wife didn't realize I was down here, and she looked down the basement stairs, saw the light was on, and she told one of the upstairs Amazon devices to turn off the basement while I'm sitting down here.
Yeah, what they should have done is...
You said, like, Alexa, turn off
the basement. Oi, shut up, Ian! God. what she should have said was...
Well, Amazon I don't
oh,
call
for God's
it
sake.
That, so you did that.
Damn it.
Robert Vince Jr. says, how about the top? Oh, no, he's only saying hi, everyone, and to Adam. That's what she said. And then about the title, as in, ha, Penis Patrol. Yeah, I was trying to say something.
I've told you people what what my basement is called for the Amazon device, but you don't remember.
I don't care. All I'm trying to say was, what your wife should have said was, turn the lights off and keep them off and lock the door and stuff. Right, where do we go? I'm still in episode one. Right then, so what episode? Ace is making friends with Lindsay Dunlop, who actually does suit this weird makeup and 80s wig, to be fair. And the doctor meets up with the chap we met in the first scene, that led to that woman being, eventually killed. And he's trying to manipulate the doctor into, doing the same thing. And he ends up unconscious. Was it killed? I can't remember now. Anyways, is it unconscious or killed? He just sort of folds over on the doctor's shoulder.
Isn't killed yet.
I know, but
the Happiness Patrol comes and he kind of gawks at them. Then I think he's killed.
No, okay, well, I'm not. He just loses consciousness and the doctor leaves a calling card in his hat. And then a little buggy turns up with a load of women on it. And the doctor and harmonica bloke hide in the corridors and then make their way into the Candyman's kitchen. And then hide because the Candyman's little... Is it his husband, this little bloke? Or is it his creator? I can't remember now. Or both.
Creator.
Well, the guy in the kitchen is his creator.
All right.
Yes.
It
happens to be Harold Innocent is the actor who has been in all sorts of stuff.
Okay. I will say, though, I remember when this story went out, and obviously this Bassist Licorice Allsort man turned up, and I thought, great, that's really going to, anybody sort of takes a mickey out of us Doctor Who fans is going to have a field day after seeing that. But now I actually quite like it. I think the performance is very typical Doctor Who monster-esque, but I actually think it's very, very good. And I still now feel that it's quite a good costume and quite good at work. Its job may be a bit silly, but I actually quite like it as a monster. And it almost looks good enough to eat, especially its head. They're my favourite licorice all sorts of... No, the ones with the blue sort of... are they purple little circles on them?
Yeah, blue,
I'm losing...
bubbly things on them. It's like, those ones are good. They're a bit squishy and...
Anyway, the doctor and...
You know what Eccles says about licorice?
Don't want to know, but I'm sure I'm going to have to listen.
It gives you a good run for your money.
There you go!
Jeez. Anyway... So the doctor, the doctor and harmonica bloke try to escape, but of course, what's his name again? Oh, Candyman says, "I like my victims or whatever to die with smiles in their faces." From what the vibe I'm getting off Mary, I think it's very unlikely she's going to end up with a smile on her face at the end of this particular review.
I haven't heard Mary say much.
She's listening intently, unlike some people. Anyway, so Ace almost...
It's my job to interrupt.
Almost earns herself a funny wig, the way she's making friends with these people. And there's a funny scene in which the Candyman have got Harmonica Bloke and the Doctor in a sort of... almost like a sort of barber's
Herbal
chair. With
Sigma is the Harmonica...
I don't care. I'm calling him Harmonica Bloke because it suits him. They're in like a barber's chair with a black cloth in front of him. I'm regularly, at least once a month, in a similar situation when She Who Must Be Obeyed gives me a haircut and a shave.
It's been well over a year since I've had a haircut.
Marvellous.
Must look like a wild man.
Yes.
So I'm just sticking for quite a long scene in which the doctor's trying to manipulate the Candyman into knocking lemonade onto the floor. And the funniest thing about the scene was the label on the lemonade bottle couldn't have been less subtle, could it? Just a white label with a little bit of simple sort of graphic on it and the word lemonade. I think a bit more imagination.
It's a special lemonade.
It's special lemonade.
It has to telegraph to us that it's lemonade.
Yeah. Anyway, so it ends up on the floor.
Actually, literally in a kitchen where you're dealing with candy and stuff and you're going to have many bottles of different kind of flavors and stuff, it probably actually would make sense that that bottle would be labeled with what the contents were.
Well, it should say Danger Lemonade, really, shouldn't it?
Well, for the Candyman, yeah. But, I mean, it's an ingredient, so you know, all your ingredients have, you know, cinnamon's got cinnamon on it, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
And it's a science fiction fantasy TV program.
It is indeed. Well spotted. Oh, I missed the bell then. You nearly got a ding then, but I missed the button, so bad luck. Robert Vance Jr. says, I like the blues music.
For him or
fix
ding
the
for
mood
me.
From the Harmonica Man. Thank you. He is officially called the Harmonica Man. Thank you, Robert. So the Doctor and the Harmonica Man escape this situation because in his petulance, the Candyman knocks the lemonade on the floor and ends up with his feet being glued to the ground. Very amusing.
Which doesn't really make sense.
It didn't matter. I enjoyed it. Meanwhile,
I know it's a science fiction fantasy TV program. Yeah,
Priscilla has confiscated some Nitro 9. Is it 9? Because I know in Sophie Aldridge's book, the Nitro gets upgraded to a different number, but I can't remember what it is. Because I'm currently
it's
in the process.
It's not named. In fact, that's a little bit strange, because we are assumed to know that it is an explosive until actually she throws the one.
Well, she threw the explosive against the Daleks. What are you on about?
Yeah,
no,
she called...
no. In this story, the Heaviness Patrol person,
Priscilla.
Okay, never mind. Yeah, she does realize it's an explosive.
Yes, please, Ian. Please help me with this.
There's a point in the story where Ace normally is a point where it's like, oh, what's that? Oh, it's a real high powered explosive. So watch out, you know. She
yeah,
just gets
she
the
never
Nitro 9
it.
Out, and the audience has to make the assumption that
there
it's...
There you go. Know, if, thank you.
You'd never watched it before, you'd be like, what's she got an aerosol can for? Oh, it went boom. That's an explosive.
Yeah.
That's okay. What he's complaining about is the lack of explanation.
Okay, fair enough.
Thank you, Ian. I guess I'm having trouble.
I've only been here a short time, but I speak fluent Kirby.
You do, yeah. You're pretty amazing.
Anyway, so the Candyman, who's still stuck to ground, is quite cross with his creator for not
being quick.
You know
something,
and...
Master?
Oh, God.
The Candyman can't.
Anyway, he's quite cross with his creator because he can't unglue him from the ground quick enough. And then we meet some weird little aliens that are very thick sort of facial expressions, but...
An odd language thing that make them. I mean, I don't know if it was. I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, is it great to make an alien not actually speak English? But we're supposed to understand all aliens, and only the only thing I understood from them was I think they said "wicked" at one point.
Wicked, yeah.
Yeah, that's and obviously the TARDIS translation circuit's not working particularly well at this particular time.
Yeah. It's the sugar or something. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe so. Robert Vance Jr. says in the '60s Batman. They labelled everything in the Batcave.
Yeah, they did.
So, anyway. Moving forward. So there's an indigenous species, which is these weird creatures underneath. They remind him a little bit of Centaurites in some ways.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, there you go. Are they type people or something?
What's that, sorry?
I said, aren't they the pipe people? Don't they live in the pipes?
Yes.
Well, but it reminded me of Centaurites in a way until when the Doctor, Barbara, Susan, and Ian went down to the surface, and there was one nice Centaurite and one horrible one, and they were trying to manipulate it.
Well, Ian should tell us what they did.
Why?
You just said he went down to the surface.
Of the Centaurites, what's it? The Centsphere the Centaurites lived
I'm
on.
Let me cut this one short. He's making a parallel between Ian and Ian.
Yes.
Oh, very good.
So can we move on now?
Adam, you're too focused on this good show. You know.
Belly laugh guffaw. Yes, well done, Kirby. Neil James says my Happiness Patrol name would be Cup of Tea. It would then quickly change to needs a pee. Don't say that because it will actually trigger my bladder reflex. So thanks for that, Neil. And then he said, sorry. Right then. So where do we get up to? So the Doctor and Harmonica bloke are sort of now part of a let's help out the pipe creatures. And then he bumps into Morgus, what's his name again? The bloke from Caves of Androzani. Morgus.
Well,
that's
Morgus,
it.
Yeah.
Trevor.
Yeah.
Morgus.
Trevor Sigma.
Morgus.
You know, Trevor
Sigma Morgus.
Since everyone who is from off planet is a Sigma, does that mean Ood Sigma visited and he decided to keep the name?
Maybe.
So the Doctor eventually gets introduced to Helen A. He's quite doctorish in these scenes, actually, which I quite enjoy.
He introduces himself to Helen A.
Oh, whatever. Hang on. If I had some hair on my head, I'd help you split it.
Yeah, you'd be tearing it out, yes.
God. And I did have a full head of hair when I first started this podcast.
Maybe.
So anyway, I'm just
you do nice work, Kirby.
There's this show on which people who have been a bit miserable have to perform to entertain somebody. I don't know. I think it's LNA. And if they don't aren't successful, which is 99.9% of the time, they get killed. I'm just moving forward a bit because there's a funny scene in which the Doctor sticks the Candyman back to the floor again.
Yeah.
It's theoretically they're auditioning to be in the Happiness Patrol.
Yeah, but they don't do very well, do they? And Ace is up to do some performance. And the Doctor's a bit worried. So that's how episode two ends.
Yes, and that's the screen grab that I used when asking for feedback.
Okay.
I believe the gentleman that was behind that hatchway was also lost the page again.
Does imply he's made notes.
Delta and the Bannerman is one of the henchman guys, I think.
He's
a Bannerman.
Let me see.
For being where everyone's supposed to be happy, he's not very happy.
Yeah,
I think that's the irony of the story, Kirby.
He was Chima in Delta and the Bannerman.
Ah, right. I did forget to mention that Fifi was in the pipes and got nitro-nined. The funny comedy bandage that Fifi has in episode 3 made me chuckle.
And the funny thing is this whole story is supposed to take place overnight, so the bandage wasn't on Fifi for very long.
Okay.
Because there's the scene where Helen
her species heals quite quickly.
Yes, thank you. Well done, Ian, for science fiction fantasy TV show. It obviously comes on the same planet as Adric, so there's no problem with that whatsoever, is there?
It's an Aurelzerius puppy.
Yes, thank you.
But what was one of those doing in England in the 25th century? Because the doctor says he ran across one. There.
All right, Kirby, would you like to text me to text you the answer to that one, or do you want to work it out for yourself?
He ran across one, yes, because it was Adrix when he crashed on Earth, right? Gotcha. And then the doctor actually ran across it when he was digging stuff up. It was fossilized.
Well, I'll give you a clue, Kirby. It starts with an S and ends with a W. Science fiction fantasy TV show.
Yes, I gathered that.
Right. And the other thing, of course, it doesn't really matter. Right then, Terry Marth says, must be kettle time. What, to whack him over the head with? Yes, let's go and get the kettle. Right, where we go. So the Doctor does a very funny, amusing scene in which he does a sort of a song, a cappella.
As time goes by, actually.
Yes, he didn't do a bad job on it. Harmonica Man rather aptly played his harmonica. Because Ace is being marched into the theatre for her scene. And then all the Doctor does a bit of a show, doesn't he? And some of the sort of 80s ladies are finding it quite enjoyable and laughing and sort of going along with it. Whereas the Priscilla's little band of psychopaths didn't like it so much. Moving on. There's a scene in which there's an argument. I can't remember. There's one of the... Priscilla, I remember the name of, but there's the other... lady who's quite prominent. I can't remember her blimmin' name, but there's an argument between her, Helen H., and Priscilla.
Susie Q. That's Leslie Dunlop. Susan Q is Leslie Dunlop.
Oh, no, it's not Leslie Dunlop.
It's Daisy K.
Daisy K? It's the one that's a sidekick, or tries to want to be the sidekick of Helen H. She's a really sort of buttering up. And
Helen A, not Helen H.
Oh, Helen A, for beep beep sake. And apparently,
she's the closer to the beginning of the alphabet, the higher in rank you are.
Okay. Well, somewhere along the line,
she's the head.
Somewhere along the line, I managed to thank you, Lillian. I managed to miss the sniper scene.
Oh yeah, the sniper scene.
Tell me about the sniper scene, so I can have a rest. I'm having a rest.
Well, pull my quickly. We're talking about. Go ahead.
No, go on. The sniper scene, quickly.
Oh my God, that was Teabag.
What's that got to do with the sniper scene?
No,
there's a great scene where the doctor gets the snipers to not shoot him and to actually throw their guns away. It's actually rather brilliant scene.
Then, Lillian, I'd like to convey my sincere apologies for trying to move the episode on, and by doing that, of course, the sniper scene, as you say, nearly got talked over. So thank you, Kirby, for inserting that particular detail. And now I can move back to where I was.
Well, what did you think about the sniper scene?
I couldn't remember it. Right then, there's a scene in which...
Can I say something?
Yes, you can.
The aforementioned Daisy Kay, played by Georgina Hale.
That's the one.
Credentials, and yes. She was Teabag. There was a bunch of different shows. It was like Teabag and the Rings of Olympus, Teabag's Christmas. Yeah, there was a whole series of these. They were kids shows, like.
Yes.
Yeah, and she was in all of those. She's been in lots of stuff,
and she's still on telly now.
I know.
I've never heard of such a show.
Well, don't worry about it.
It was like kid-alt type stuff. You know, it's like after-school type audience.
Is it British? Is that why?
Yeah, of course it's British.
Yes.
Oh, on itchy bottom. Right then, that's not the part of my bottom where my leg is, not the other. Anyway, back in the tubes, the doctor dodges an influx of stuff
that
lands
on
poor
riding the tube.
Poor Fifi again gets a bit of treatment. She gets crushed by lots of. I presume she's a she, by lots of rocks and I don't know.
You never know.
And then the Doctor and Ace go in to see and threaten poor Candyman, who actually is quite threatened, he does charge at both of them. And there's a big explosion of, I presume, more lemonade, and the Candyman just, like the proverbial Wicked Witch of the East, melts into... the remains of what the metallic remains that were inside him.
And then we have that weird, bizarre dialogue exchange between the guy from the kitchen and Helen's husband, and it's just weird.
Yes.
Just like, oh, we have to explain why he was like this and whatever, and they quick shoved all this. Oh, well, I bought him from somewhere else, and then I put candy on him.
It's like, yes. Oh, well, do you know, the kitchen set, which I did quite like, it reminded me of the sort of kitchen set you would have had on a level of Donkey Kong Country. It was very... the sort of background you would have sent. So Donkey Kong Country was the first really good graphics from a 2D platform game that I ever saw, anyway. It was an incredible game. So good, in fact, I've probably played it 3 times, and I get bored of games like that. But it had that, it's got very sort of, almost like a Sonic the Hedgehog style backdrop as well. upright thing, sideways thing, and very deliberately placed sacks of sugar and other ingredients and one big mixer in the corner. But it was still a pretty good set, to be fair, I have to say. And of course the shadow of fans going around, and then the metallic remains of the Candyman appear down a chute.
Onto the execution platform.
Yeah. And then Helen A. I got it right this time?
Yes.
Hey.
Is that right, Helen A? She gets betrayed by her husband. Or is it the Candyman's creator? Candyman's creator and her husband.
Gilbert.
Who look like they're going off together, to be fair.
Yes, they are.
Yes.
Which, is that the... Are they going together in a romantic way? Or are they
possibly.
No, it's just like... Well, basically, Helen's husband's just like, I'm out of here. And he's like, oh, can I go with you? And he's like, fine. Because he's like, he's complaining. He's like, oh, I don't know about the company, though.
Yeah.
It's like, well, how'd you get onto my shuttle? It's like, I told you, the captain let me on.
But I will say that I did feel that it was a romantic
departure. So did I.
Which I quite enjoyed.
With all the other gay references in this.
Yeah, and I liked that. I was very before its time and subtly done. Didn't get bashed over the head with it. So you're basically allowed to make your own, you know, assessments on things. And off they went in their little pod. And then the doctor, because at this stage, Helen A is fleeing because everybody's allowed to be miserable. And... she's running
away, Helen A.
And the other lady that you said that was in that program gets strapped to a chair while...
With her wig pulled off, and the wigs look like fake tribbles.
Yes, and the harmonica man is quite happy to play his harmonica, just to torment her. And then the doctor has a conversation with Helen A, and then she's being very sort of, stubborn until she sees the just about dead Fifi, in which she suddenly breaks down.
She becomes unhappy.
Yeah, naughty. She has to be executed. And then the women are forced to sort of repaint everything to more satisfactory colours, including the TARDIS.
They were forced.
But I think they had to. They were wearing special suits. They looked like they were being sort of forced into it.
They painted
the TARDIS.
Coveralls.
All right, thank you.
They were painting things blue because they said, thanks for bringing back the blues.
Yeah, okay. But anyway, the TARDIS was also painted back to blue, but they missed a bit, which Ace...
But why were they wearing their heaviness patrol uniforms when they painted it pink, but then they used the painting coveralls when they paint other things?
I don't know.
It's a science fiction fantasy TV program.
I have a serious question at this point, because it's right at the end here. Is that bit where Ace picks up the paint pot and paints over, is it my imagination, or do you hear a kind of sting of music that sounds like it's from Curse of Fenric?
I don't know,
and I'm not going to turn up the volume right now.
No, you're not.
No, but it's just something for later. It's just one of those things that's like, it occurred to me. I was like, because the music slightly changes it there, and then...
I will check. Is Curse of Fenric also a Dominic Glynn one?
Probably.
Let's check.
It might be Kev McCulloch. I haven't heard anything back from Mrs. Melrose.
So, who's barking?
A dog. Right then, so, I've got a thing come up. Sorry, we're having trouble playing this video. That's disgraceful, Facebook. What have you got to say for yourself? Which means now I can't monitor anything. So I'll say what I thought of...
Master, music in Curse of Fenric is Mark Ayers.
Oh, yes, of course it is. Oh, apologies to Mark for getting that wrong. Right then, so Happiness Patrol, it's okay. It's a bit silly. In some ways, a bit embarrassing in regards to... imagining the neutral TV viewer watching this and really finding it stupid. Certain aspects, I like the idea of a place that you weren't allowed to be unhappy in, because it was always going to have a almost like an ironic element to it. So it's just, there were so many things about it that were a little bit of a take the mickey out of Doctor Who situation. There had potential, there's some good characters, like I said, Harmonica Bloke, even that Priscilla was quite a good character. And I didn't find the story as bad to watch this time as I had on previous occasions, to be fair. I thought Sylvester was very good in it. But, yeah, it was a bit of a massive dip from the previous story to this one, which is what we still have to put up with Doctor Who now, to be fair. And Terry Miles says that Ace painted over the TARDIS lock. I noticed that, but I thought, no, how many people have painted over their locks? Pretty sure they still worked afterwards. But yes, it was a bit of a silly thing to do. And Robert Vidal Jr. said, listening in the car, watch out for that squirrel. So yeah, it's
a bit of a... Watch out for that tree!
It's a bit of a letdown, to be fair, Happiness Patrol. I don't know if that's why the guys at the Happiness Patrol called their podcast Happiness Patrol, just out of irony, because I wouldn't imagine that they'd pick this one out as their favourite story.
I missed that podcast. That was such a good podcast.
It was, yeah. It's not absolutely abysmally terrible, but on the flip side of it, it's not very, very good either. So, yeah, it's a shame. There we go. It's a shame. Go on, Kirby. I'll let you have a go.
Huh, you must have watched a different story than I did.
We liked it, did you?
I love this one.
Oh, dear.
It's the Doctor takes a situation that he's normally just happens to be someplace and has to fix things. He deliberately went here to fix the situation.
Okay.
Which is a complete reversal from normal. He's also a lot darker than, I think about the craziness of his first couple of stories, yeah, the Seventh Doctor, and he's funny and flippant everything. Here he's really, really serious.
Yeah.
The whole sniper thing.
Sylvester's is really good. I did say that.
Yes. The whole sniper thing is that his disarming them is brilliant. It has some problems. I don't like Fifi. Also, the Helen A., even though she's supposed to be Thatcher, I don't recall Thatcher. Some of these, I don't think what she actually is doing is very Thatchery, but you tell me that.
No, it's not. But you can see what they were aiming for.
I was reading somewhere that, what was the Prime Minister from the 9th and 10th Doctor period?
I can't remember.
Yeah, when she, at the end of the Christmas invasion, when she blasts the cigarettes, that's a Thatcher thing.
Yeah.
So, this one, I like the way that they had to, they didn't have enough budget to make a jail, so they made the area that, the waiting area that you can't leave or else you'll be killed. The very clever use of lack of budget there.
Okay.
Yeah, the go-karts didn't work, but we've seen that sort of thing before. But yeah. I just like the overall feel of this one. It's not the best Sylvester McCoy one. I'm not saying that, but I like this one.
Okay. Ian, what did you think?
I'm going to be the only person of our group who likes it, I'm sure.
Harriet Jones, MP for Flight
Eleanor.
That's
the one. Well done, Ian.
Thank you.
I thought you were being funny, because, yeah, we know who you are. But also, I had an Amazon delivery. My speakers for my outdoor projector arrived, so outdoor movies this winter. Woo-hoo.
Oh, yeah.
You can do that in Florida.
You're in Florida.
You see, now I'm torn, because everything that Kirby said was right. But the problem with it is that's all looks good. There's just bits of it that are good. There's the bits that Sylvester do. That little interchange at the beginning when he says, oh, yes, I've noticed such and such, such. And, oh, this is going on. Yeah, so we're going to hang out and find out. All that stuff's lovely. And the kind of whole going for this atmospheric thing and putting some a blues vibe in there, I was really cool with that. The whole Candyman costume I thought was fantastic. Yeah. I'll tell my story in a minute. But the rest of it all falls down. The other creatures, were they just like the original race of that planet, and they got enslaved to do?
Yeah, that's right.
And the problem
it's
is
explained in the story.
But the thing is you're gonna want to follow the story, and I found myself for. Well, the first time, really, just like it was on, and I was not really watching it. I kept getting distracted. I do have ADHD, but you know, I was just like, whatever. And I'd watch some of the more fun bits, like the Candyman bits, but other stuff, it was just running up and down tubes. There was a lot of stuff that was really good, like I said, the atmosphere and that. But I never got an idea that this was a heavily populated city. You see, like, most of the people that you see, they're all the Happiness Patrol. You don't see anybody else.
They're all asleep.
Doesn't matter, though.
It's like the one... because it doesn't help. The leader of the Happiness Patrol says that she likes working late at night.
Right, but it just... You know what I mean? No, it doesn't get... you don't get the scale of it being a population that's being suppressed, but it's just people who like to hang out at night are being suppressed. What? You know, when the sun comes up, the Happiness Patrol go back to bed. You know, you just don't get that scale of, like, this affects a you know, because one of the quotes that the doctor has is, the sound of empires crumbling. It's like, I don't get the scale. This just looks like a small, tiny colony where the lady likes to make sugary sweets and has an obsession with people being happy.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's science fiction fantasy.
For God's sake.
No, but this is where I feel it fails. This like lack of cohesion among the whole thing, where you just don't really get an idea as to why this whole concept. I mean, it's probably a lot better in the book, but I haven't read the book, and after watching it on TV, I don't really feel inclined to. But anyway, quickly, my story. I, of course, was born and raised in New Zealand. Of course, my dog's going to take now to bark. I grew up in Doctor Who fandom in New Zealand and got to know Paul Scoones. And for those of you who don't know who Paul Scoones is, for one, he was instrumental in helping return an episode of Doctor Who, The Lion, back to the BBC. And he also works, he's got a couple of books, a book or two out on the Doctor Who comic strips, which are well worth the read. And but he writes the infotext. Well, he writes some infotexts for BBC DVDs, and I love infotexts. And so when I found out, we had been separated after I moved over here, and we didn't talk as much, and I found out he was doing that, I think it's fantastic. But so at a Doctor Who, we went to a couple of Doctor Who conventions together, and at one of them, there was a young lady who. Was dressed up as the Candyman, and it was a brilliant costume. Rochelle did an awesome job, and now the two of them are married, and they own a they've been married for quite some time, but they ended up through that meeting, you know, her being on stage and that thing is like, wow, that's an amazing, you know, so they got talking and that's how they met. And they own a science fiction cult TV-based store in, I think it's Takapuna, not sure. But it's called Retrospace. I think it's retrospace.co.nz. So, yeah, if you're in New Zealand and you want to get some merch, look them up. Lovely people. Paul is one of the reasons I got into Doctor Who, because he was just so... You know, he was knowledgeable. He knew what he was talking about, and it was like, and he was really kind, you know, with that knowledge. That's what you want when you get into fandom. You want somebody who'll, like, teach you, not go, oh, don't watch that. That's crap. Oh, you got to go watch that for yourself. And hey, when you do watch it, why don't you write a review for our fanzine? I'm like, okay, cool. So, yeah, without him, I wouldn't be here. So,
So have you written for Time Space Visualizer?
I wrote a couple of reviews and stuff. There was another tie-in to the story. I'm keeping it on topic. Is that we did a couple of mini conventions at one point called DoctorCon, and we bought it back and decided to do one in Wellington, just of our own, a standalone convention. And by that, it was basically a glorified meetup of we were going to watch videos and play silly games and maybe sell some books or something. We decided to come up with a theme for the con staff, and we decided we got a good deal on a whole bunch of pink t-shirts, and so we were the Happiness Patrol. we got a whole poster designed by I've got it around here somewhere. He did a fantastic job on our poster art and everything. And somebody asked me about it, and it was a local newspaper, and I said, we're expecting, quite a few people and that, and like, and they were asking more questions, and they asked about how the size of the club, and I said, I think it's about 500 people, across New Zealand. That was a pretty fair estimate at the time. They said that we were expecting 500 people.
Oh, dear.
Wow.
No, it was the most brilliant thing that could have ever happened, because it got picked up by every media outlet in New Zealand.
Oh.
I went to so many interviews. I had news reporters coming out to the house taking pictures of me. I had to go to several radio stations. We went out with a morning crew on one of the, the morning breakfast shows. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. And we ended up reaching so many more people who never knew about the club.
Yeah.
It was the best thing that ever happened. It was the best kind of...
Did you get 500?
No, but I think we ended up getting maybe 100, 150. I mean, we were expecting maybe 30 people.
Uh-huh.
We didn't expect people to come from... People came from the South Island, because we were at the bottom of the North Island. People came from the South Island and crashed on people's couches, and we didn't have any accommodation. It was just at a community center, there was no accommodation. There was no hotel.
Yeah,
but it's like people just, and Paul and John Preddle, who's very well known in Doctor Who, has a website as well, and I can't remember off the top of my head. I'm gonna be in trouble. But he was also well known in New Zealand for winning Mastermind with the subject of Doctor Who. He's got an encyclopedic knowledge of Doctor Who, and he's just an awesome guy. But anyway,
match him and Matthew sometime.
But so in conclusion, the story just really sucks.
Well,
what a great story,
also, Master.
Yes,
Master.
Dear.
No, not my story. The other story. So.
Master. Scoons also wrote the original fan novelization of Shada before Gareth Roberts got a hold of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I remember reading that. And the most recent info text I read of his was Dragonfire, just a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, excellent.
And apparently the next one will be Scream of the Shaka.
Okay. Well, thank you, Kirby. Thank you, Ian. On the live feed, who have we got now? We've got Laurie Nick says puppy cuddles. That's because Magic has entered the room and is now shivering on my lap. He doesn't seem to want to get down, so I'm rather lumbered with him for the moment, which is not the best of segues, because it's now time to find out what Mary thinks.
Okay, well, full disclosure here, I did not watch this. I couldn't even bring myself to watch this, because it's one of my all-time most hated Doctor Who stories.
Unlike the others,
I'm not torn at all. I really, really dislike this one.
How do you know you dislike it if you haven't watched it?
Oh, honey, child, I have watched it probably three times. Over
So you have watched it. You just didn't watch it now.
Oh, wow, you got the full honey child on that one.
Yes, I have really learned to hate this one. I know that it is supposed to be satirical and allegorical and all that, but it's, to me, it's just tedious. There's just so much to it I don't like. That harmonica thing that you all talk about loving grates on me. It takes me back to the days of the gunfighters with that constant ballad being sung throughout the story. You know, I just wanted to grab that harmonica and throw it into a corner or something. It just became very irritating. And it was so cheaply done. I mean, it looks cheaply done. It might not have been, but it looks cheaply done.
It was cheaply done.
All in studio, and so many things that are stupid and laughable. They're like the go-karts and all that. I understand from Cartmell's book that he had trouble trying to get it more to be more atmospheric. He fought with the lighting people all the time, trying to get them to tone it down, and you know, because he knew it was going to look bad on videotape, you know, the way they tend to light things there. So I think he in spite of his best efforts, I think it still looks very flat. And you know, it's more comic book looking. And I was reading somewhere, I do a lot of reading about these episodes. I was reading somewhere that Verity Lambert herself made the comment that this story made her think back to the Hartnell era, where there were stories that were kind of fantastical like this. And I thought, that's true, because we've got the Sensorites, we've got the Planet of the Giants. Galaxy 4 is another one, and the Celestial Toymaker. When you think of those Hartnell episodes, yeah, they were pretty, you know, I don't know, almost comic book like.
Yeah, and the Mind Robber as well.
Oh yeah, and the Mind Robber. Exactly.
And that was not, it wasn't Hartnell, but it was a similar sort of context.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, so now I understand why she made that comment. It didn't take long to think of those different episodes. The Candyman, I thought he's just stupid to me. He's not scary. He's not anything. I just whenever he appears, I just want to like shake my head and say, oh, they could have done so much better with that. And for Kirby, the waiting area that you think was so clever. Well, it did turn out to be a clever idea, but that's because they had an actual prison set. But somehow it got lost. And here again, this is from the Cartmell book. They couldn't locate the prison set at all. So he and some other writers sat down and said, okay, what can we do instead? And they came up with this waiting room, which they thought was an even better idea, because it's that whole thing that governments do where they tell you one thing while they do another. It's like, oh, we don't have any prisons here, you know, but if you step outside that line, we're going to kill you. So they thought that was even a more clever thing. But unfortunately, to the general public, it probably just looks like a cheap way to get around actually building a prison set, which they had. I hated it. It would go way to the bottom of my list in terms of, you know, favorites to most disliked episodes of Doctor Who.
So you didn't like it, Mary?
I don't know. I'm a little torn.
Right, then. Still no Mrs. Melrose.
Well, why don't you call her or something?
Oh,
Master?
What?
Speaking of Script Doctor, there's a little extra on, actually it's a very long section on the DVD talking about the politics of Doctor Who. And in it, there's a section where at the very beginning of Script Doctor, Andrew says that he was asked during his interview to become script editor what he'd really like to do. And he said something like overthrow the government. And about, I don't know, Mary, was it like 10 or 20 years after he wrote the book, it became suddenly newsworthy that he said that in the book, because someone was trying to say, oh, the BBC was a hotbed of left-wing idealist or something. he even ended up on TV trying to defend this.
Oh my!
The little TV segment is even in that section.
Well, what I also find it's kind of revealing, or maybe I'm putting more meaning in it than is there, but in all of Andrew's book, the fewest pages are given to this story. Mm. He goes on and on about all the other stories, but one just gets a few pages.
Yeah, I was just trying to find it in here. Couldn't find it.
Anyway, back to the live feed where Robert Venture Jr. said, "Wow, Ian reminded me of my convention days when I was with Macron. Our mascot was a white rabbit." And then Lauren...
Pardon? Does it sound like a name of a convention?
He was with Marcon. Sorry, I said it wrong.
Marcon?
M-A-R-C-O-N. Marcon. The mascot was a white
there's
rabbit.
There's a science fiction convention in Ohio called Marcon. Is he from Ohio?
Possibly. I don't know. You might have to ask him.
In Ohio?
Lauren Nix. Yeah.
Columbus?
Robert Venture Jr.
No, they don't call it Marcon.
Yeah, it's called Multiple Alternative Realities Convention. It's been around for a long, long time. It's been around for over 50 years.
Lauren Nix says, imagines Mary cramming that harmonica down that guy's throat. And then Robert Venture Jr. says, my wife would dress as Ace. This is at the Marcon. Okay. So I'm still waiting for a response from Mrs. Melrose.
Well, maybe he'll answer if he's talking about the Ohio convention or some other Marcon. But Mary, the next Marcon will be May 7th through 9th at Crown Plaza Columbus North in Worthington. And it's a full science fiction convention. It's not just a Doctor Who convention.
Splendid. Right.
I've known of it for
well, there is
entire...
there's Doctor Who group in Columbus, Ohio, yeah. But they don't call their convention Marcon.
No, this is not a Doctor Who convention.
Oh, okay. All right.
Science fiction convention.
Okay.
Feedback time.
Pew!
So if you wouldn't mind coming forth with said feedback.
Here, let me refresh the page just in case something else has happened. What?
God.
I said time to make the donuts.
Actually, there's not all that much feedback. I guess people don't like this one. Robert Wince Jr. says, when the doctor sees Ace on the poster, he knew he should have shown her how to do the spoons or how to pull a ferret out of her pants.
Wow.
And you know, the what? You know, he used to pull a ferret out of his pants, Sylvester, before he was a doctor.
Yes.
And also, he did the spoons in this story, and also she tried.
Okay.
Robert Wince Jr. says, how do you do? I see you've met my faithful handyman. He says, a little brought down, because when you knocked, he thought you were the Candyman. He also says his review of Happiness Patrol. The Doctor and Ace visit a human colony which is controlled by a Thatcher-type person named Helen A., just to remind you, Adam, and a robot named the Candyman. The secret police called the Happiness Patrol keep order, and everyone must be happy even if they're not. The Doctor disagrees with the way people are forced to behave and starts a revolt, which forces Helen A. out and frees the people to a better life than they had. When Helen A. discovered the dead body of her dog, Fifi, she finally shows some sadness at the end. It felt like the Doctor Who version of 1984. The story does have a gay subtext of Helen A.'s husband going off with another man in her spaceship. It does have the feel of Paradise Towers with the pink hair police and the Candyman. I think the story should have had each person the Doctor and H meet express a different emotion. Oh, I see. Everyone should have had a different emotion like anger, happiness, love, sadness, etc. to show how they expressed what they couldn't in public. Yeah. It was just too dark and the Candyman was a little silly. I did like the harmonica man and the film noir feel, but not my cup of tea. I feel it was a step back from Remembrance. My rating, 2.5 out of 5. I will skip Ian, the other Ian, the Captain Kirk Ian. Terry Miles says, shame Ace didn't get some practice in for the greatest show in the galaxy. Yeah. Neil James, The Happiness Patrol. I liken this one a little bit to Paradise Towers. On the surface, both of them appear very silly and childish, but scratch beneath the layers, and there's some pretty hard-hitting horror to be found. Also, like Paradise Towers, they don't have much to say about it. The cast are brilliant, and there's a witty script for them to enjoy. I like the character of Trevor Sigma, and seeing the Doc playing his spoons alongside the harmonica makes me grin. The TARDIS looks pretty in pink, and the set for the candy kitchen is awesome. Is Fifi good or terrible? I just don't know. Is The Happiest Patrol good or terrible? It's good, I think. 3 stars out of 5.
Oh, by the way, Robert Venge Jr. says, yes, I'm from Ohio. Okay.
Ah, so...
Oh, is he? Oh.
So, hey, he and you ought to get together, Barry.
Well, there's another member of the group that is from Ohio. Trying to think of his name. It suddenly escaped me. When I think about it, I'll tell you. But yeah, he and I were going to meet up in Columbus when they were going to have a convention there, and then it got canceled, so I never did meet up with him.
Well, Robert Wentz Jr. needs to convince you to go to MarCon, because I've heard nothing but good things about MarCon.
Okay.
The entire time that I have been a convention attending person, and my first convention was in 1978, and I knew about MarCon then, but I've never been able to go.
John Nasta is the name of the guy who's in the 20 megabyte group, that he lives in Ohio.
Yeah, there's even a famous Filk song, which is a science fiction folk song about the MarCon ballroom.
Anyway, back to the feedback.
You don't care.
There's feedback from Robert Haynes.
Oh, good. I'll let you read that. Have we come to the end of your feedback?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Mary, how would you like to embark on a reading of Robert Haynes' feedback?
Robert Haynes says, some good ideas in this story that perhaps weren't realized by the BBC as well as they should have. In parentheses, I felt that similarly Paradise Towers had that problem too. As director Chris Clough states, the lighting needed to be lower in some areas of the production. It was a big ask for them to expect to create parts of the city in a BBC studio. The, in quotes, roads or paths tend to look like black studio floors, which spoils the illusion. They really needed to be painted a matte black with a bit of texture to them. The girls with their weapons reminded me so much of the Hartnell story Galaxy 4. Well, there we go. McCoy gets to play the spoons yet again, though it was probably more appropriate in this story.
Yep.
A shame the vehicles were so slow, especially the go-kart. A light jog and you'd pass the Doctor and Ace, really making the escape farcical. They really should check things beforehand to see what was possible. Did health and safety say that the cart was only allowed to go so fast? The best scene for me was the Doctor talking down the two guys with guns. More of that kind of stuff is great. McCoy and Aldridge shine together, though. It's like the pairing of the Tom Baker Doctor and Sarah. For me, that's one of the highlights of this period. I always feel it's a shame that sometimes what appears on screen doesn't quite get across a number of things that are better explained in a making of, like Paradise Towers, Ghostlight. But then, I suppose, that's what makes for rewatches, learning more and appreciating more from watching it more. And I love having something that I can watch over and over and get something more out of. Not one of my favorite Doctor Who stories, but it's not a dud either. I love that this era tries out new writers, too, who bring something different to the table. I hope to be better and be on next time. Take care.
And why, thank you, Robert.
Yes.
Terry Miles says, via email, that's 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. The Doctor and Ace arrive on the planet Terra Alpha, ruled by Margaret Thatcher. Sorry, Helen A. Sheila Hancock was great. I don't think I got the feeling. She did a good job. I didn't forget the feeling. This is me talking, that she relished doing the part. But anyway, moving on. On Terra Alpha, no one is allowed to be unhappy. If found unhappy, they disappear. I like the way the males are only allowed to be snipers and not roaming the streets with the happiness patrols. Very sexist. Oh, of course, this was written by a man in the 1980s. Now I understand. Mind you, the uniforms the patrol wore would have looked silly with hairy-legged males dressed in them. They were a bit silly now. They were a bit short for the 80s. The Candyman was stupid, but made me want to eat licorice all sorts for some reason. Yeah. Joseph C. and Gilbert M. were so laid back, they were funny. They're probably eating too many sweets. The protesters marching to the forum took two episodes to get there and were not found by the Happiness Patrol until the last one. If they had them on the monitors, then they should have disappeared them in no time. After all, Helen A. had ordered them disappeared. Sorry, but
couldn't
Linda
use the Tantalus field from Sitting on the Edge of Forever.
Sorry, but Linda and I found this to be a bit boring in places, and the spoons got annoying in no time at all. Still, next we have the Silver Anniversary episode with Silver Monsters, Linda and Terry Miles. Thank you, Linda and Terry Miles. Fantastic. We also have... Oh, hang on, I've got something for Ian.
Alrighty.
Send that through to you, Ian, while we have this recorded...
Oh, goody.
Recorded interlude, if I can get... Hang on, I'm jumping ahead of myself. Here we go. Recorded interlude, which starts with this piece of music.
Hello, 20 Minute Map Podcast, it's Ian Kirk. Happiness will prevail.
It will.
Yay.
Happiness Patrol by Graham Curry. We have tunnels and the golf cart again. Electric vehicles are suitable for TV studios. The Happiness Patrol cart has the comedy, tragedy masks on the front. This is a political story. Sheila Hancock famously played Helen A. as Margaret Thatcher, but the script does not seem to be based on Britain. Strikes and demonstrations were not limited to Britain at the time, and mass disappearance was more a South American thing then. I don't remember the government being interested in happiness. Zoannan, what was the Southampton score?
Chelsea and Southampton drew 3-3.
Yeah.
Bye for now.
Thank you for that little sports interlude, Ian. Very good.
As I recall, that go-kart was not electric. It had a very loud engine, didn't it?
I don't know. Anyway... Ian, I sent you some stuff over.
Yes, you have.
Were you excited
indeed
to hear
and you would
it?
Like to, you would like me to begin my own slaughter now?
Yeah.
I suspect this is going to be closely studied.
Yeah.
I'm just raising the height of my chair a bit. Hang on a sec. I'm just making sure I'm ready.
Well, while you're getting ready, Lillian Robin says, "Get well, Robert Haynes," which something that we should all chime together. Get well, Robert Haynes.
Well, Robert Haynes.
And Debbie Melrose as well.
Yes. Get done with dinner, money, Debbie Melrose.
Are you ready? I'm sorry, leaning back in my chair so the dog can stop shivering.
Okay. All right. He's up there, Magic. All right. Happiness. Why wasn't this a story with Ken Dodd or getting the blues out of office? Dear 20 Megabyters, the Happiness Patrol is, of course, a closely studied exercise in bringing down the downfall of the conservative Thatcher regime. The essential analysis mirrors the superficial enforcement of happiness with the consumerist boom of the late 1980s. See, first mistake.
Or the 1890s.
I was doing so well. Tripped up by a date. And I don't even like dates. The late 1980s, which was designed to get... We'll take that out in the edit, right?
Cool.
consumerist boom of the late 1980s, which was designed to keep enough people content to allow the fracturing of society and the social exclusion that had created... an underclass who not only suffered, but were made the subject of blame for their predicament to distract from government culpability for their crude and destructive... Is there a comma in this? Destructive...
No, you just have to start with a big breath.
economic policies in the early 1980s got you again. They almost... therefore, those labeled killjoys who are not able to participate in the happiness delusion are treated as a problem and made to disappear as not worthy of consideration rather than attending to the ingrained problems which are making them miserable. Fifi seems to be representative of that beloved monetary policy and is crushed in the collapsing foundations of the regime in the end. Presently, Joseph, who is Helen A's closest ally, is shown to desert and abandon her, as later happened to Mrs. Thatcher. The Candyman is obviously a manifestation of the then government's European policy, which had been positive and actively expanding and freeing markets, but then took a dark and negative turn. Likewise, the Candyman was producing sweets initially, but turned to killing and ends up a gooey mess, which heralds the downfall of Helen A. It should be noted that this is quite long, but it also should be noted we're only halfway through, folks. Settle in and listen to the dogs, I guess. It should be noted that whilst some suggest that this is a silly pantomime, in fact, it's mainly a serious story, and through... Oh, they've got impeccable timing. See, I was doing well, and somebody sent in the dogs.
Yeah, well, you're being heckled.
So, it should be noted that whilst that some suggest that this is a silly pantomime, in fact, it is mainly a serious story, the production is now dated, and it has a lot in common with the feel and tone of The Sunmakers, though with a very different narrative and themes. We also learn that Morgus did survive Frau Timmons' takeover, changed his name to Trevor, and settled down for a quiet life in the Census Bureau. All in all, the Happiness Patrol is all right, but it's a bit dull.
Same, basically what I said.
What?
That's basically what I said. It's all right. It was a bit dull.
Yeah, if only somebody could have written it in those few words.
Yeah.
I'd be done by now. It is based around a strong idea, but this is not well utilized. It seems both too short to develop the story well enough, and yet does not use the time available well enough either. See, that's what I was trying to say, but didn't say it well enough either. The cast is good, but the dialogue doesn't serve them. The Candyman is a significant block to taking the story seriously. You can see that they wanted to juxtapose the sweet and sour aspect in this in his demeanor, but this might have been purveyed as by the subtlety of the human face rather than the licorice all sort. The TARDIS crew do seem settled and firing on all cylinders now. It's encouraging to see the script editor trying to return to the program's traditional attempts to say something interesting in the stories, but the production choices are leaving something to be desired. Short seasons are probably not helping, but the use of money doesn't seem to be the problem. It is different aesthetic choices which might have unlocked the potential of the material that they have in the script. The story is perhaps three episodes too short, as unfortunately the Thatcher government remained in place for a further full 2 years and did not in fact fall until I'd been living in nearby London for about 6 weeks. Coincidence? I am not at liberty to say. Next up. Yes, folks, we're done. I made it to the end. Next up, Doctor Who and the Other Hand of Omega, or Remembrance of the Cyberman. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
Thank you, Alan.
Wow. Good job.
All right, that one very well done. Mary, you've got to have to read it again now so we could all understand. I'm only joking.
I'm not sure I understood, and I was reading it.
Okay, guys, now this is what Andrew Cartmell thinks of the Happiness Patrol.
When I think of the Happiness Patrol, I have such mixed emotions because my dear friend Graham Curry, who wrote it, who was a wonderful writer and a lovely bloke, is now gone, far too young. So I just feel that I have to honour Graham by saying what a fantastic script he came up with. The reason I'm laughing is it was such a hard journey to get to that script, because for what felt like months, Graham would come into my office at the BBC and he would pitch ideas, and I just kept saying no, because they just weren't right. They just weren't Doctor Who as I saw it. And then he came in one day and said, what about a planet where it's a crime to be unhappy? And I could have kissed him. It was just what a great, because it has such, it's such a strong, simple story. I mean, it's a beautiful parable In fact, a few years ago, the Archbishop of Canterbury quoted it. He said there was a Doctor Who story about a planet where it was a crime to be unhappy. And I thought, well, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Because it's recognition. But beyond that, it speaks to what a strong, simple, profound idea that was. It's an idea which has a tremendous resonance. I think more so than any of the other Doctor Who's I worked on. None of them had that central concept, which is so universal and has such ramifications. Anyway, Graham was a very witty writer, and he wrote a tremendously witty script where the state executioner is the candy man. Yeah. This is sort of jovial.
A bit like a Bassett's licorice all sort of man.
You could imagine him as a bearded hipster in short. In fact, anyway, that's pure Graham Curry. And there was, again, John, the set designer, whose surname you'll have to check, but I think it was Adson. Anyway, he did a magnificent job on the sets for this story, but they were very badly and unsympathetically lit, so they looked like sets. So the show doesn't look as great as it should do. There's a sort of go-kart that doesn't really move properly. But these are all just standard Doctor Who things. I think that there's some great sequences, fine acting, and it's a really wonderful script.
Yeah. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Things coming through on the live feed. Lillian Robin said, what is Magic wearing? Well, he's wearing a black hoodie with the word security blazoned on the back. And then Terry Miles says, is Magic your security team? He's always been our security team. But sadly for Magic, he feels that he's slightly more important than he actually is in regards to the security issues.
Why is he wearing such a hoodie?
Because he gets a bit cold, and it's just...
Oh, okay.
Well, it's first quite short.
Why do you wear a hoodie?
I don't.
This is a cute little hoodie, and the word security suits him. Because he's got, like I said in a post on Facebook, he's got inbuilt surveillance via his radar ears. Right, we've actually managed to get through the feedback.
We have Florida dogs, so they get cold in the winter. When we get cold days, they get really cold, so we've got little jumpers for them.
Oh, yeah. Star was a bit jealous, or looked a bit jealous, when Deb pulled Magic's hoodie over him this afternoon, and so Magic's got an old jacket he would wear in the winter when he was shivering a lot. And where he's thinner than he was, the jacket fits a Star now for some reason. She's smaller than Magic, but Magic's lost a bit of weight, so he's wearing things that would never have worn fit him before. He's quite getting thinner and thinner in his old age. But anyway, enough of the 20 megabyte talking about dogs podcast.
I didn't realize that Grant Curry had died. Now I'm seeing where Andrew put out a tweet about it last year, in February 25th.
Oh, okay. Oh, Ian Kirk says, now I remember the poll tax resulted in many people disappearing from the electoral rolls to avoid the tax. That was on your feedback request, Kirby. Poor bloody hell, Magic. Oh, Jesus Christ. Jesus
Christ. Oh, dear.
What are you feeding that dog?
Jesus. It's funny, Kirby starts talking and Magic does the worst fart. He's like a blooming skunk. Filthy sod. What am I trouser leg?
I'm switching back to the video feed so I can watch this.
Anyway, where do we go? Spent too much deodorant. Where do we go? Oh, yes, we're going to do... We were going to do the news. Doctor Who news. But you said about Graham, what's his name, didn't you? Do you want to get out of the room now? Go on, then.
Now that he's done his worst.
You going to go? No?
Okay, yeah, I'll leave this here and I'm out.
No, he's just going to stand down there looking awkward. Right, DoctorWhoNews.net. Doctor Who... I've just ejected the DVD by mistake. News. No, that's not news, is it? NEWS. .net.
Ooh, you mean no, you have to type all that in? All I have to do is start.
I type
doctor.
It on in because every time I try and do the shortcut, I end up with a page not found, 909 or whatever it's called thing. And it's not doing anything now for that reason. Oh, it's loaded. Here we go. Doctor Who Magazine, issue 557. which you can buy online through whoone.co.uk.
Is that whoone.co.uk?
Is that who?
Yeah,
I fluffed it. Damn
you
it.
Did indeed, yeah.
I shouldn't have tried anything. I did an L&T Butcher today. I should really rest the rest
yes,
of the
rush,
show.
Yes, rush your
wishful
dulcets. Anyway, Doctor Who magazine features a picture of a sort of warlike Dalek on the front, a bit like you remember the white Dalek with the big bulbous thing that ended up being Davros, a bit like that, but it's gold. And it says, exclusive preview, Golden Death, the makers of Daleks reveal their master plan. So there you go. Yeah. So plenty of stuff in 557, which you, like I say, you can order and get straight for your letterbox through whoone.co.uk. Doctor Who Gaming 2, New Adventures. The world of Doctor Who has expanded with three planned releases of brand new adventures. Join the 13th Doctor, Jodie Whittaker, 10th Doctor, David Tennant, on a quest to save reality in a new console and PC game. The Edge of Reality. Eh? What did you say?
A quest. I said a quest.
Quest, yes.
It's the quest.
Yeah, some few graphics are quite interesting, actually, on the Doctor Who News.net page. I always used to look at the Doctor Who Online for Doctor Who News, actually, but I haven't looked on there for ages. Just dawned on me. That's all that they've got on there. On BBC One last, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, was the new series of Who Do You Think You Are? Sadly for that month, one of my favourite programmes, by the way, we've only got 4 episodes this year. We normally get about 10, but probably COVID's put pay to it. But the first episode of the series was Jodie Whittaker. And but she pretended she wasn't the Doctor in it. She was somebody called Jodie Whittaker. And looking,
what's the D stand for?
Jodie Whittaker's family, not the Doctor's family. I would have found the Doctor's family history a bit more interesting, to be fair.
I think he's ignoring us, Kirby.
Yes.
Anyway, so Jodie,
I'm used to it.
Jodie Whittaker on Who Do You Think You Are? And the other thing I've been, because obviously we've got Sophie Aldred's imminent arrival on the show, I thought, and obviously Debbie's health's a bit up and down, so I felt that I can't rely that the episode that Sophie's going to be on, that Debbie will be available for it, that I got the audiobook for her book, which is, I'm sorry, I forgot the title, At Childhood's End. So I'm currently in the process of listening to the audiobook of that, because I haven't got time to read it, but I have got time to listen to it if I'm driving around the car, or last Monday I was baking shortbread, so I had about a couple of hours in the morning before Deb came home. So I'm currently listening to that book, and I feel quite confident I will have completed it by the time Sophie appears on the show. So, and I say should appear on the show, because nothing's ever, you know.
When is she anticipated to appear?
Right, I better look off mechanic. This, like I said, it's a good word, that, anticipated. She's booked in to appear, according to her literary agent and herself, on the 8th of November, while we review Battlefield.
Oh.
So what we're going to do is hopefully do a little bit about the book and a little bit about Battlefield. Yeah, did you notice I said a little bit about Battlefield there, Kirby, because I don't know how long she's going to be on for. So it'd be nice to sort of get a benefit of her. We know in Battlefield that she could have died in one scene due to a cock-up on stage. So so I'm hoping she will be on that one. She has said she will, when I actually communicated through her agent, and then she bumped a message back to me personally. So I've got my fingers crossed, and quite enjoying the audiobook. It would be useful to, you know, Debbie's done a synopsis to. Did she send the synopsis to you guys? We've gone very quiet.
Who are you talking to?
Well, there's not going to be anybody in this room. I don't think Magic's going to be particularly up to reading books or anything. So I guess it would be you lot. Oh, God.
No, I haven't been.
I'm presuming she hasn't sent
it. I haven't been sent anything.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
I've never got anything.
She sent it to me, and I'll forward it to you as soon as I possibly can. And then we'll all have a little bit of an idea of what the book's about. Well, obviously, we can't talk about it in great detail. It's more of a sort of... So otherwise, people won't bother buying it as a reader, will they? Yeah. It's just maybe sort of
a spoiler-free review.
Yeah, spoiler-free review. Yes, preview, I suppose.
Preview
for people who haven't read it yet. So hopefully that'll be coming up soon on the show. I suppose we better do some sponsors, as Kirby's left us enough time to actually do it. I'm just having a look at whoon.co.uk, who are now getting the second edition.
Whoon.co.uk.
Because I'm just seeing the thing news coming up. Because if it's the same stuff as last week, anybody who listens to the show on a regular basis will already know it. It does say Doctor Who Magazine 556 and 557, both available at the same time. But Keeper of Traken, audiobook, and the Time Lord Victorious, The Night, The Fool, and The Dead are also available. That's a hardback book. I've got a funny feeling people actually collect some of these books and never read them. They just collect them to have them in a collection. What else we got? Coming soon. Latest products. Oh, that's it. Coming soon. Pre-order stuff. Daleks Destroy. That's apparently by Terry Nation. A CD format. Don't know if that's a story or what, but that's coming out on pre-order soon. Eighth Doctor Time War 4. Flying Dutchman and Displaced. A big Finnish production, and I Am the Master, which with a picture of the current
master.
That's why
Kirby calls you that, I'm sure.
Yeah, so if you have a browse through the whoon.co.uk website, where there's lots of
The Flying Dutchman is a proper Halloween story.
Oh, is it? Have you listened to it?
Yeah, The Flying Dutchman and Displaced, Flying Dutchman is very creepy.
Lavazzi, like we said last week, have got a blog, a Doctor Who blog, which is really, really worth getting involved in. Sign up to their newsletter, sign into the blog. And while you're on there, you can click on one of their tabs across the top of the screen, which says Doctor Who Merchandise. If you click on that one, rather than scrolling down to the scarves, etc., you get a very good idea of what to buy your Doctor Who fan loved one for Christmas. And topically at the moment, the Seventh Doctor jumper, which I've had two of in my life, but I wore them out, basically. So, I mean, not out as in outside. I mean, I wore them. Yeah, they go. Yeah. So I could essentially do with another one just to keep to maybe frame and get Sylvester to sign, because he's going to Wales Comic Con next year. And whoon.co.uk, lavazzi.co.uk, and iwheroes.co.uk. Now, good old our friends at Isle of Wight Heroes, are going to be donating a goodie bag to a cosplay competition that FantasyCon are running in the absence of the event this year. It's going to be a little bit of fun. So if you wanted to partake in that, basically it's a 30-second video. First of all, join the FantasyCon page on Facebook. Then make a 30-second video of you in your cosplay, maybe describing it, and maybe saying why you are a particular fan of this character, etc., etc. 30 seconds is more than long enough to do that, because I'm on TikTok, and most videos, or the average time of videos on TikTok, is about 30 seconds. So that'll be fun, won't it? And we'll do a little competition, and on the 31st, maybe we'll have a winner, and then we'll try and send out this goodie bag to whoever's won it. I'm hoping it'll be somebody on the Isle of Wight, because it'll make it a little easier. But yeah, so that's coming up soon. I'll be posting, hopefully, if I can remember to tomorrow, I'll be posting something about that. So that's iwheroes.co.uk, where you can buy some fab stuff. They've even got their own sort of merchandise now, heroes bags and stuff like that. So Funko Pops. And yeah. So, and the other thing I was going to say, and I was eagerly awaiting the first of the new series of Star Trek Discovery, was not disappointed in the slightest by a wonderful episode, which really does tee up the rest of the series nicely. So that was fab. That was Friday that came out. So that's something worth watching. With The Crown coming out next month, we actually got some stuff to watch on TV soon. Woohoo! So, and we did watch.
My girlfriend's in The Crown.
Is she?
Yes.
Go on.
Just don't tell her husband. Olivia Colman.
What else? Oh yeah, did I say last time that we watched Adam Sandler's new Halloween film? I can't remember if I said that or not. It's good fun.
Master, I hate to talk and run here, but I'm gonna have to get off early.
Well, tonight. well. As
the doctor's paying.
Oh, that's the wrong season. That's full music. Well. As
only a few minutes early, but I've got something I need to go do, and you're rambling.
Yeah, I'm not rambling. You can talk. Pots and kettles. As I was talking about, well,
goodbye,
that was, if I could actually get the sentence out, Lieutenant Joe Kender would say that. Anyway, bye, for you, Kirby.
He's trying to say goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Fancy Pants, Scarecrow, blah, blah, blah. Right then. So that's quite ironic that he leaves a few seconds before I end the show, but there you go. Right. So next week.
You had to go.
Next week it's Silver Nemesis.
Yes. Along with the anniversary.
Yeah. So I'm quite looking forward to watching it again, actually. I think there's aspects of this particular story I like quite a lot. So, so we'll talk about that next week. Same time, same place. I'm just checking my ever-active calendar.
While you're doing that, really briefly, the site that I was trying to remember before that John Preddle and his team have put together, it's called Broadcast, but it's spelled Broadcast. And basically what it is Kirby would actually love this. I hope he listens to it later, but you can basically look at what story was broadcast on what date.
So if you want to know
what story was broadcast closest to your birthday, and you can track the stuff in the US as well, and New Zealand and all over the world, but it's classic series. So it's an interesting collection of like all the dates and where they can, little snippets out of newspapers and things of the stories being broadcast in whatever country. So
I used to know which story was mine, my birthday story. I thought it might have been The Smugglers, actually. But now you said it and I've got to look it up now. I know it was a Hartnell story. Carry on just talking about yourselves a minute. Doctor Who.
All I'm doing at the moment is I've kind of fallen off the CW Hero bandwagon for a while, but kind of crawled back in with Legends. I'm really kind of enjoying it. It doesn't take itself too seriously, and has a bit of fun with, some of the time stuff. Oh. It seems they finally got rid of Rip Hunter.
With who?
Rip Hunter. Played by Arthur Darvill.
Oh.
Yeah.
Arthur Darvill.
Yep.
I met him.
You did?
I did, yeah. So I'm just trying to fill. Apparently there's no actual Doctor Who on. There wasn't any Doctor Who on. Yes, there was. Series 3, apparently. But I'm trying to work out which actual. Just talk about yourself for a moment. I'm like, aha.
Carrots.
It's the gunfighters.
It's
the gunfighters. So basically, the last episode that aired prior to my birth was Don't Shoot the Pianist, which is the episode 2 of the gunfighters. So there you go. That was interesting, wasn't it? Big chime of yes from the listeners. You say it's fascinating.
Worth waiting for.
Did detect a twinge of sarcasm in your voice there, Mary?
Just a twinge, eh? I thought I was laying it on pretty heavily.
Next week it's Silver Nemesis, and yes, it will be same time, same place, because our Southampton are playing their match earlier in the day, about 2 p.m. So And I'm on holiday next week, so I can actually watch it. Woohoo! It's all good.
It'll be excellent.
Yes, indeed. Excellent. And it was, of course, like talk back, that just reminded me that Mr. Banks' final appearance in mainstream Doctor Who.
Yes.
As the cyber leader. Right then. So until next week, thank you for partaking. And next time, give us a bit more feedback. Otherwise, Kirby will cry. Till then, goodbye.
Bye.
See you later.
Alligator.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.